This is Thoughts on the Table by DisgracesOnTheMenu.com.
Hello and welcome to Thoughts on the Table, the audio blog on food and food culture. Paolo here, back with a recurring guest today. With me is Diana Zoranes. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Paolo. It's great to be back.
I'm super happy to have you back, Diana. People have been commenting on your podcast. One of the most successful podcasts was the one on the Mediterranean diet that we just had in January this year.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
You know, you have this amazing ability to capture Italian culture and describe the Italians better than I would be able to do, being maybe too Italian. So...
Well, that must be the anthropologist in me that can observe.
Yeah, it's possible. You're studying us. That's what it is. Well, anyway, so Diana, you know, has been living in Italy for 4 years now, and she works at Wine Pass, which is an online magazine on wine in the Piedmont area, correct?
Yes, that's exactly correct. It's in Italian and English, and it's geared towards wine tourists that are coming to Piedmont.
Excellent. And so wine is pretty much, we can say, your job right now, right?
Pretty much, yes.
Which is fantastic because, you know, we finally get on the topic. So, yes, wine is defining of the Italian culture itself. And I love talking about wine. But how did you get to be interested in wine? Where did it start?
Well, my interest in wine definitely started over here in Italy because... It naturally started over here because I moved here after college. So therefore, most of my time in the U.S., I was younger and I didn't actually drink wine. And so I came to Italy. I went to the University of Gastronomic Sciences in Polenzo for a one-year master's program in food culture and communications.
That's this low food university, right?
Exactly. It's the slow food university. And during this program, this year-long program, we had a lot of different kinds of classes, and many of them would last just a couple of weeks because our professors came from all over the world. And several kinds of these classes were tasting classes on salumi or chocolate or cheeses, and there was also a tasting class on wine.
It's pretty tough there.
Yeah. Difficult year in Italy.
Yeah.
And these tasting classes, there were black glasses set up in the classroom. And each one, they were opaque, of course, had a smell that you could find in a wine. And what we did was smell these without looking inside. And we would write down what we thought the scent was, whether it was vanilla or pineapple or something. And then we would look and see if we got it right. And the more we did it, it was incredible because the more we did it, after just a couple of lessons, we started being able to identify it right away. And we could even identify the same smell in the wines. And it was just incredible how much of a difference that made in tasting wines.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I don't like how wine is often a very intimidating drink to people because just knowing a little bit more about wine, like this was just a couple of weeks of lessons. It makes it so much more enjoyable and it's not that difficult. So that's why I started getting interested in wine.
It's amazing. And now you work at Wine Pass, so I suppose you have been continuing to discover more and more about wine and tasting more wines.
Yeah, exactly. At Wine Pass, I write a lot about the different wines of the region or winemakers, or we go on itineraries for wine tourists and we write them out, map them out, tell people where they could eat or buy a bottle of wine, so forth. And the more I write about these, the more I learn about wines and winemakers in the region. And it's very interesting. I'm always learning more about wine here.
Yeah, I'm very interested to know if there's any differences in wine production between North America and Italy for what you were able to observe there in Piedmont.
Gosh, there are huge differences. Of course, I didn't actually ever go and visit wineries in Napa, and I don't know a ton about American wine, but I know a lot more about the differences in American and Italian culture, and I do know some things. A big difference is the size of wineries. In general, the average Piemonte winery is small. It's a family production, and I think that goes without saying. It's, you know, for all of Italy, a lot of the wineries here are small. And a big winery, you could consider a big winery to make about maybe 500,000 bottles a year. And a really big one, maybe 1 million bottles in a year. Whereas in the United States, a big winery could make several million cases of wine in a case, or 12 bottles of wine. So that's a huge difference.
I see. So the size, which also goes with the size of territory, I suppose.
Yeah, it does, definitely. And so that kind of gives a difference in the mentality, because, you know, if you're a small winery, you're doing all the work. You're doing everything from the winemaking, you're in the cellar, you're in the vineyards, you're producing the wine, and you're promoting it too, and you're inviting guests into the winery. So you're doing everything. Whereas these big wineries, they're great at accommodating people and, you know, making a profit off of it with a smile, because they can charge people whenever they come in and taste wines. These wineries in Italy, I can think of maybe one that would charge you to actually go on a tour.
Well, I guess they're proud of it, and they're not used to having too many visitors as well, I suppose. It's their family business, so it's not just a job.
They will
take you through and show you everything, as opposed to, you know,
yes,
you being maybe the public relations representative for the company. And, you know, maybe tours are one of the services offered, whether it's for money or not, but it's still just your job, right? So it's different.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of passion, and it's their life, you know. It's what they do all year round, all the time. So
yeah, I remember, you know, my experience about Piedmont and wine is my dad used to order wine from Piedmont, a place called Lu, very small town. And this maker was extremely small. And I remember, you know, every year we would go and order the wine, and then he would get it shipped, and then he would bottle it himself in my grandma's basement. And me and my brother, which were like 8 and 4, were there to help bottling the wine, which may sound crazy to North America. The kids are involved in the production. Be some kind of abuse, but no, we weren't abused. And also, we didn't like wine. So that's the thing. Kids don't quite like wine, because it's a kind of an acquired taste, and we were never interested. Obviously, we tried it, and my dad always tried to make us try a little, knowing that we wouldn't have liked it.
Yeah.
So that's the difference in culture there. But I remember visiting this, going back to Piedmont, visiting this production, and particularly the cellars, this super cool, dark place. And cooling temperature too. It was like maybe 16 Celsius, something like that.
Yes.
And then they would get a little bit of wine out of these kegs, and you know, pour it in a nice glass and bring it up to taste it on a, you know, on the kitchen table. And this is how my dad would choose which wines to order. So that's
That's so nice.
Yeah. So it was fantastic. Anyway, yeah, so that's still my memory. So I'm imagining that, you know, this scales to the entire region pretty much. And this is how it goes in Piedmont and wine. And what about the process itself, like the aging, the actual production? Do you know of any differences on the technical side?
The only difference that I can think of, that I know of, because I don't know a whole lot about the technical processes of winemaking in the two different countries. Mm-hmm. But I do know that California uses a lot of water and irrigation, whereas in Piedmont, they don't. It's a lot of dry cropping. As of maybe 2 years ago, I think they allowed certain regions to use water in extreme droughts, maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm not too sure, but I know that in general, they don't use irrigation at all. And it's, they kind of look at it as something as it's forcing the plant, you know, it's not its natural habitat. You're forcing it to drink water when nature wouldn't give it to it. Yeah. And it's actually, and this is another thing that is different between here and the US, as much as I know. This goes hand in hand with their practices in the field, which are very often organic, but not actually certified. They're organic, or they're sustainable, but they're not certified because they do it out of respect for the vine and for the vineyard. They don't try to find loopholes where in, for example, they don't try to find loopholes in organic certification where they can use a little bit of one chemical or not. But they really try not to use any chemicals at all. Many winemakers don't.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is good news if you're...
Yes, absolutely. And I noticed this in general in Italy, in Italian products, organic, or agricultura biologica, as they say. Yes, it is present, and you can find it even in supermarkets. There's a section on organic food, but it's not as trendy as it is here.
Right.
I think that in general, the consensus is that there isn't much difference with respect to regular produce. And there certainly isn't much in flavor in Italy, I find.
Oh, no. No, there's not a difference in flavor at all. Mm-hmm. Actually, the organic might even be not less flavorful, but older, because people don't really buy it. And so the products
exactly.
get old quickly. Really? No, really.
Right. Not as fresh. So. Yeah. Okay. So and what about instead the differences in culture? What is your experience with that? How do you see Italians relate to wine?
Yes, that's a very big difference from the U.S. and Italy, because wine is really a part of their daily life, and it always has been. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, a glass of wine at lunchtime is not looked down upon. And it's always drunk with food. It's not really this special drink for only special people mm-hmm. during parties or other holidays, but it's an everyday drink that you have with your food. The difference with that in the U.S. is that I see often in movies or television shows or, you know, pictures on Instagram, for example, people have their full glass of wine by their computer as they work, or mm-hmm. they'll have one right as they come home from work to unwind and mm-hmm. de-stress. And it's seen, it's just, to an Italian, I think that would be like taking it out of its context. I'm not saying it's bad to drink it like that, but it doesn't make sense to an Italian to drink it like that. It makes sense to drink wine with food. It's part of the meal.
Yeah, appreciation of food itself is to have it with a little bit of wine and pair it. Like if you're having fish, of course, you're going to prefer a white wine. And red wine will go, of course, with, you know, meats and cheeses, especially hard cheeses.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times these reds or these white wines, if you have it without food, it just isn't the same. Piedmont is famous for having very tannic wines, which mm-hmm. is tannins are that feeling on your tongue of having a dry wine.
Yes.
And it can get a little bit tiring on your palate if you just keep drinking wine after wine, mm-hmm. Which I've noticed at different tastings with
right.
Nebbiolo is one in particular that's very tannic. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that later. But so if you just drink this wine without having any food with it, you miss out on a lot of the flavors and a lot of the enjoying it, because it's just too much to handle.
Interesting.
Basically, yeah.
So we already mentioned that you, you're based in Piedmont, of course, and Nebbiolo is one of the wines that you have been tasting. Would you say that that's one of your favorites?
It is definitely my favorite, the favorite. It makes many different famous wines. Well, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say many, but several famous wines that come from Piedmont, such as Barolo and Barbaresco.
Yes.
And yes, and but it also makes a lot of other wines, always from Piedmont, such as there's a Langhe Nebbiolo, there's a Roero Nebbiolo. There are different Nebbiolos from Alto Piemonte, like Bocca in Genne and Gattinara. Mm-hmm. There are so many, and every time you taste them, even though it's 100% Nebbiolo grape, mm-hmm. but they all taste different. They all yes. have a very different profile, and it's so interesting, and it's just, I just love Nebbiolo. Never disappoints.
So all these wines are based on the same grape, and they're just aged in different ways to achieve a different product, a different wine that is a different denomination, correct?
Right. Or maybe people would understand more appellation. I don't know which one is used more, but that's right. And although the differences come also from, you know, the soil or altitude.
Right. And Nebbiolo itself is also an appellation. It's not just the name of a grape.
Right.
And it's also one of my favorites, by the way. I do like that family of wines as well. I don't like wines that are too mellow. I don't know if I can describe
that. Yeah, it's definitely not a mellow wine. They're very, at the same time, they're elegant and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to explain that unless you actually drink it and understand how the wine is. It's a really great wine.
Yeah. And Nebbiolo, also there's a curiosity about the name, which I happen to know. I'm sure you want to talk about it.
Sure, yeah. Nebbiolo comes from the word nebbia, which mm-hmm. means fog in Italian. And it takes its name from this because the fog is a big part of the landscape in Piedmont. It comes in the
late fall and winter, and it just covers the hills all morning long. And Nebbiolo is a late maturing grape that has a very long growing cycle and is harvested whenever the mists start to roll in the late fall. So that's why it takes its name from Nebbia.
Fantastic. It's always fascinating to picture it. When I think of Nebbiolo, I do see the rolling hills covered in fog. So it kind of makes it really magic. It's really cool. What about other grapes in Piedmont?
Oh, yes. Piedmont has a lot of different native varieties. The big ones that are actually, they're produced even more than Nebbiolo. There is Barbera, Dolcetto. Right. Are two big red grape varieties. White ones are Moscato and Arnaise.
Yes.
And then there are lots of others. Tons of these like obscure names, especially in the higher hills. But others that you might come across for red wines are the Verduno di Pellaverga. And there's Grignolino, Rucche, and Fresa. These are all red wines and red grape names as well. The wine is named after the grape. And for other whites that you may find, there's Gavi, Erbaluce, Nascetta, and Favorita. And these are all other names that you might find around. I think Gavi and Erbaluce for the white wines, you will find more commonly abroad than the others. But, you know, obviously the, you know, Moscato and Arnaise and the big names that I've already named, you will be able to find those abroad.
Do you have more information on any of these wines, like, I don't know, Barbera or Dolcetto?
Yeah, Barbera and Dolcetto are the names of the grapes, and then they make a lot of different wines, and you'll find it named after, like, Barbera d'Alba, Barbera d'Asti, the same thing with Dolcetto, and that comes from where they are made. So d'Alba means from Alba, Asti from Asti, which is in the Monferrato. Which is a winemaking region in Piedmont. Dolcetto, for example, you might find Doliani, which is, it might just be called Doliani, even though it's Dolcetto di Doliani. That's another place where it's made, or Dolcetto di Ovada, which is a really great Dolcetto.
So, and all these are wines that are DOC, as we say in Italy. So the denomination of origin is controlled. Which means that they are certified to be produced from grapes from that particular region that their appellation refers to. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yes, it also puts some different guarantees on the quality and the time that it's aged, you know, how many months or in what kind of material it's aged in, you know, wood or stainless steel. It depends on, of course, it depends on the wine. And then there's DOCG, which is, you could say, one step higher.
Yes.
And of course, you can find wines of great quality that aren't even certified at all. But this is just a general rule to figure out what those letters mean on the labels.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if you're not familiar with the wine, it's a good thing to look for the certification because it will give you certain guarantees. Diana, it's been fantastic, of course, talking with you. It's so fascinating. And I wish really to take a tour now in Piedmont and go through all those valleys and try all the wines that you mentioned. Because I do know a few of them, but I can't say that I'm an expert. So I definitely have work to do.
Oh, yeah, you should visit. You're invited. And anyone listening to the podcast is invited to come to Piedmont.
Absolutely. You'll take them around personally. That's what Diana is promising you. Oh, say, fantastic. So for you listening, if you have enjoyed this podcast, please do us a favor. Go on iTunes or whichever podcast player you use and subscribe. It really means a lot to us. And if you're inclined, please leave a review as well on iTunes. You know, and feedback is always welcome. Leave your comments there or on the blog. We're very happy to hear anything you may have to say. And it's really important to us. So Diana, again, thank you so much. It's been awesome. I'm looking forward to more. Let's talk some more about the Italians.
Absolutely, with pleasure.
Yes, so maybe
it's been great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And maybe the next one can be an anthropological one on the Italians. Let's just break down this population.
That would be really interesting and fun.
Okay, I'll sign you up.
All right.
Have a good afternoon.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.